This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And let's start with income inequality in Massachusetts. This state has one of the highest rates of income inequality in the nation. So we're launching an occasional series, taking a closer look at what that means, the impact it has on life here, and what to do about it.
I mean, this is an issue that's just so pressing. It is on so many people's minds. Take the new WBUR poll out just today. People were asked, when they say they want politicians to improve the economy, what do they mean by that?
Mass Inc. pollster Steve Cozzella found that a majority of voters, 57%, say that improving the economy means distributing the gains more evenly between groups, even if it means slower economic growth overall.
It's not just about who can maximize the amount of growth and make more stuff and, you know, increase GDP by the highest. In this poll, it shows that more people would prefer to see more even gains rather than just more gains.
And why is that? Well, if you dig a little deeper, you find that a lot of people just aren't feeling that optimistic. 80% of the poll's respondents say income inequality in Massachusetts is going to stay that way or get worse. Just listen to Linda Mason, a high school teacher from Clinton, Mass.
I don't see any signs that it's going to improve anyway soon.
So what's really at stake here? We keep asking ourselves that, and that when people say so plainly and so honestly that they don't see any hope in this matter when it comes to income inequality in Massachusetts, what might be withering away? Can it be summarized in three simple words?
The American dream, that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone.
That's Ted Widmer, senior research fellow at the New America Foundation. He's reading the most important passage from a 1931 book, The Epic of America, by James Truslow Adams, the man credited with coining the phrase the American dream.
With opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. It was not just a dream of motor cars and high wages, but a dream of a social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position.
So this new WBUR poll about income inequality in Massachusetts really prompted us to spend a little time talking about this phrase, the American dream. Because while James Truslow Adams was describing something fundamental to America, he was writing about New England.
Well, he was looking for the origin of this tremendous energy that was beginning to take over the world at the beginning of the 20th century, the American century. And he found New England the most satisfying beginning point for what would become the power of the United States. And even though a non-New Englander, he thought the energy really had come out of colonial New England.
Not surprising for a man with the Boston Brahmin-esque name of James Truslow Adams. But really, how history twists and coils in surprising ways, because Adams was a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, but he wasn't a historian by training. He came from an immigrant family, and get this, the man who defined the American dream was both a Wall Street financier and a New Yorker.
He grew up in Brooklyn. He had Venezuelan ancestry, and he did go to Yale for graduate school, but he was not, like so many New England historians, a product of a Boston institution. And he also started his career as a Wall Street broker, and so he wasn't really a pure historian at all, but he made enough money that he could retire midway through his career, and he just started writing history.
So what else do we know about what kind of person he was? Because in your piece, you write about how, you know, he did his due diligence. He does well on Wall Street. But then instead of just continuing to make more money, he sort of branches off into all these different directions. I mean, what kind of person was he that made his intellect range so far and wide?
Well, what makes history so great is everything is surprising the more you dig down. And he doesn't fit into any known category. He would often get his stuff out in magazines, but he didn't really fraternize with professors of American history very much, and he seems to have been somewhat prissy, the way so many historians were in that period, but not all of them. And yet he wrote this phrase and articulated this ethos that was anything but prissy. It was really a celebration of the right to be yourself.
And is it fair to say that his life in and of itself was somewhat emblematic of what he intended the American dream to be?
I think so. I mean, it wasn't exactly like he made a fortune after having been born into poverty. That wasn't quite true. But he really did redefine himself. So I think he did live that phrase.
I mean, because when you think about it, it's an astonishing phrase. It's just three words, the American dream.
Right.
But it's up there. I mean, it's up there with government of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's up there with, you know, we the people, the Declaration. I mean, it is one of the defining phrases that this country uses to describe itself.
Yeah. It's shocking that it's as recent as it is, because it sounds kind of timeless. But in fact, it just came into existence in 1931.
And that was right in the middle of the Great Depression. Ted Widmer says the Epic of America was a bestseller at a time when economic fear ran rampant. The stock market had lost three-quarters of its 1929 value. National income had been cut in half, and Herbert Hoover was president.
You would think it might have radiated criticism of Herbert Hoover and the Republicans who were reeling from the Great Depression. But in fact, he wasn't that partisan. He didn't especially like Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal. So it was, you know, kind of an intellectual phrase that was not especially connected to the politics of his time. He just wanted to say the right to make the most of yourself was a crucial American right.
So that brings us back to what's at stake now, what those poll numbers about income inequality are really getting at. It's not that the American dream is an official right enshrined in the Constitution or protected by the rule of law. It's just a concept. But it actually feels much deeper than that. It feels like the American dream should be an intrinsic right of us all, the right to aspire, to work, and to succeed.
It's depressing, but the levels of optimism in the dream are declining, and not just belief in the dream, which the Pew Charitable Trust goes around and conducts polls every few years on. They are finding that respondents feel low levels of confidence in the future. They haven't saved up enough money. They are living day to day, often from part-time jobs. And we're seeing a lot of that in everyday news. And, of course, that's going to lead to frustration.
Hmm. And you even quote another survey from 2013 by YouGov, a polling firm. They found that 41% of respondents said they believed it was impossible for most to achieve the American dream.
Right. 31 disagreed, but the 41 felt that it was impossible for most to achieve the American dream.
You know, here we are. I'd like to bring this conversation back to New England and Boston because, you know, we are living in a time where this region and city are changing very rapidly. And one of the ways in which they're changing is that, you know, the Brookings Institution has found that income inequality in Boston is the third highest amongst major cities in the United States. Hmm. And it just seems so ironic to me that one of income inequality, this thing that a lot of people point to as perhaps a major driver in people's lack of faith in the American dream, is so high in this place where that inspired the phrase to begin with.
Yeah, that's surprising. I didn't know that. And in a city that's known for its liberalism, that this illiberal gap is being permitted to exist and to grow is surprising.
Yeah. You know, Ted Widmer, I was really interested to read your piece because we are living in a time where the American dream, just those three words, I mean, it falls from the lips of every politician under the sun. I mean, it is so commonly used that it's become a caricature in and of itself, which is why, you know, upon reading the expanded writing that you quote from Adams, he had a very specific intention and a specific meaning for what he believed the American dream was and is. And to me, it's sort of embodied in this idea that, as he writes, that everyone should be capable of achieving their fullest stature regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position. And I think that intuitively, most Americans, that's what they understand the American dream to be.
That's right. I think most Democrats and Republicans actually agree that what we want is equality of opportunity. It's not possible to achieve pure equality, economic equality, other kinds of equality, but we can do better with equal opportunity. And I think both Republicans and Democrats want that. They want, in theory, that anyone born in the United States can make the best of himself or herself. And there are a lot of differences, of course, in how you make that possible. But equality of opportunity is the key.
So what lessons can we take from James Truslow Adams, the Wall Street-moneyed non-New Englander writing about New England history when thinking of the American dream? What was his prescription for protecting that dream?
Even though Adams said, please don't interpret this just as a license to make a lot of money, that is, you know, what a lot of people want to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, as you point out, he writes that it's not a dream of, quote, motor cars and high wages, but a dream of a social order.
Right, a social order, which is important because it's often interpreted just as an American dream for me to get whatever I want. And when you say it's a social order, that brings in other people. It's a dream of a society that works, in which the poor are not so poor they have no hope at all. And so to have a meaningful social order, you have to give everyone a chance to succeed. And if they don't succeed, they have to still have decent lives. And so I think that's the part that gets neglected. It's a dream of a social order with other people, not just individuals.
That's Ted Widmer, Senior Research Fellow at the New America Foundation, talking to us about James Truslow Adams, the New England historian credited with first defining, coining that phrase, the American dream. Widmer wrote about Adams in the Boston Globe.
And that question of how, in the face of rising income inequality, how do we protect and nurture the American dream? That'll be at the heart of our occasional series on income inequality in Massachusetts for the next many months.
Stay with us. Coming up, how the bed bug infiltrated our bedrooms and our minds and took over the world. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.